In November 2003, I turned on the radio and heard a piece of news that truly shocked me. The United Nations, at an emergency meeting in Paris, announced the fact that within 30 years, all the great apes in the world would be extinct. In other words, by 2035, there would simply be no chimpanzees or gorillas or orangutans anywhere in the wild. Now, I don't know about you, but I find this almost unbelievable, to realise that by the time my children are my age, our closest relations, animals that mirror much of our own ancestry, will be gone forever. That if I have grandchildren, they will never know what a chimp or a gorilla is, aside from film footage or drawings in books. And as I thought about it, I got angry and determined to find out more about the great apes, why they're becoming extinct, and who they actually are. And so I went to visit the people who know.
Radio Netherlands presents All But Gone, Last Chance to Save the Great Apes. The program is produced and presented by Anne Blair Gould.
My name is Jan van Hoof. I'm emeritus professor at the University of Utrecht. We're going now to the colony. We appear from behind the trees, and I'm just wondering what they think of that. This is Mama. This is Mama, and she'll come to greet me. Oh, yes. Thank you very much for the warm welcome which we receive here at the Arnhem Zoo Chimpanzee Consortium. That's always the case. They obviously like to see me as much as I like to see them.
And it wasn't just Mama who was greeting you. They're all coming. How many have you got here? They're coming from every side.
There's over 30 now. And it's a wonderful group. It's a very well-established group. It's more than 30 years old now. And the group was started in 1971-72 with a number of animals which came from zoos, circuses and places like that. Most of these animals had a rather abnormal youth, and so it took a while before they really adjusted to social life together in a community. But now it is a real harmonious, let's say, society, because this is the first attempt really, I think, in the world to recreate a community which resembles a natural community. Of course, things haven't gone without their problems, but now, 30 years later, we can say it has been a highly successful, I'm emphasizing that at this moment, enterprise with its squabbles at times. Now, this is the pattern in this community, one could say. It shows all the aspects of natural social life.
The chimpanzee is one of four types of great ape, which is in fact a big tailless monkey. Five types, including us, of course. The others include the orangutans of Indonesia and the gorillas and bonobos of Africa. Bonobos, by the way, used to be called pygmy chimpanzees, until scientists realised that they differ from chimps in so many ways that they can actually be called a separate species. So, what is threatening all these apes to the point of extinction?
Well, the threats are very simple. If you want a single phrase, it's human activity. If they were left to their own devices, they'd be perfectly happy in their forests doing their own thing. But because of human activities, they have fewer and fewer forests to live in. And even where there are forests, they are pursued by humans with guns or spears or nets, because either some people think that great ape meat is the thing to eat, and other people think that great ape babies are so cute they'd like one for a pet, or perhaps just because they're in the way.
Well, there are a variety of factors contributing to the decline of great ape populations. First of all, habitat destruction. Habitat destruction is the principal cause of primate loss all around the world. But in certain parts of the world, particularly now in the area in which the vast majority of great apes still occur, the forests of Africa, forest destruction is one problem, but bushmeat hunting is very severe, and you're seeing chimps and gorillas still being hunted regularly for bushmeat consumption.
Well, logging in the area is one of the major activities in Southeast Cameroon, which is basically destruction of the forest and also opening up the forest for poachers. And that's how this whole issue of bushmeat comes in, because the destructive aspect of logging is also opening the forest and making people to move in and hunt wildlife.
So how many are left in the wild? Actually, it's quite difficult to count them because they all live deep in the forests and tend, inevitably, to keep out of the way of people. But scientists can make estimates.
We fear that gorillas might be down to about 50,000, 60,000. Orangutans are at a similar sort of level, but in both cases, that's half what it was a decade ago. So they're clearly declining, even though we can't give you precise figures. We don't really know how many bonobos there are, because they only live in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and that's a war zone. But we fear there may be fewer than 50,000, possibly as low as 15,000, 20,000, but no one's certain. And chimpanzees are found in more countries than any of the great apes, but many of those countries are down to populations of a few dozen or a few hundred, and not many viable populations are left.
And if you think, well, that's not so bad, there are a few thousand here and there, maybe this will help convince you.
You could probably take all of the remaining individuals of all the different kinds of great apes that still exist on the planet and fit them into one or probably two large football stadiums, soccer stadiums. And that would be it.
Well, that certainly puts things in perspective for me. So let's consider the threats more closely and ask if there's truly anything that can be done at this late stage. First, about bushmeat. Now, what is that exactly? Dr. Ian Redmond is chief consultant for the United Nations Great Apes Survival Project, or GRASP.
Bushmeat is an African term for meat from wild animals. I guess it's what in Australia they call bush tucker and what in England we call game. And it just means killing wildlife for food. And so if you go to a bushmeat market in Africa, you'll see everything from big, fat, juicy caterpillars, which are usually smoked to preserve them and are delicious, to big chunks of elephant meat. But great ape bushmeat, although it's only a small part of the overall market, is a very significant impact on the great ape populations. And that's because, like us, they have a very slow rate of reproduction. They have only one baby at a time. They have a gestation period almost the same as ours. And they don't reach maturity in it until they're in their teens. So, you know, if you say to a bushmeat hunter, look, you've got two giant Gambian rats, which are very popular, large-bodied rodent, delicious bushmeat. By the end of a year, if they've bred, and then their offspring have bred, you'll have thousands. So you kill one of those, it doesn't really matter in the great scheme of things. But if you've got two gorillas, and it takes them 9 months to grow a baby inside the female, 8.5, and that baby isn't going to be mature until it's in its early teens, then it takes that long to replace the animal that you've shot.
And then that's only one. Yeah.
And that's only one. Yeah. So it's a very big difference, quite apart from the ethical question over whether it's acceptable to kill an animal that shares nearly 99% of its DNA with us. So bushmeat is a very big issue in those areas where it's threatening the great apes. So if you look at the forest zone across the centre of Africa, as you get into the drier habitats, the predominant religion becomes Islam. And where there are Muslims, they don't eat primates. So they are the friends of primate conservation. And if you go to the East Africa, where more people keep cattle traditionally, they don't see primates as food. They see cattle as food, and maybe wild ungulates, wild hoofed animals, antelope and so on, as an alternative. So it depends on the cultural background of the people you're talking about. But in the centre of Africa, where the greatest number of gorillas and chimpanzees and bonobos live, that's where the bushmeat trade is still growing, and it's growing because it's changed from being subsistence hunting for very small numbers of people living in the forest to commercial hunting, where people from towns and cities come into the forest, shoot everything that's bigger than about the size of a bread box, which is what will pay for your cartridge, and then smoke the meat and take it to sell in the cities. And because people from those cultures are now living in cities all over the world, there is an illegal international bushmeat trade that sometimes even includes endangered species such as great apes.
And the bushmeat will be sold for inflated prices as well in the towns.
The further away from the forest you go, the more it costs.
Yeah. So if you're more incentive. Yeah.
If you're living in London or Brussels and you're a very wealthy African whose grandmother used to cook great apes back in the village, then for a special occasion you might pay a lot of money. And when there's a lot of money involved, then of course there's someone who will do what it takes to get that money.
And Dr. Leonard Usonga of the Worldwide Fund for Nature in Cameroon agrees that the bushmeat problem is very much more complicated than hungry people desperate for meat.
Most of the poaching and especially hunting of great apes is done by outsiders, not local indigenous. These activities carried out by workers or former workers of mostly logging companies. 98% of those we call poachers are not from the area. So I must make this point clear.
So what can be done about stopping the bushmeat trade? Well, as with so many things, it all comes down to economics.
Well, on the bushmeat issue, we did a study 3 years ago. This study was basically to enable us really have a good assessment of the impact of poaching and how best can we address the issue. First of all, I should say the key reason, the primary reason for hunting and bushmeat trade is poverty, looking for an easy source of income. And it's quite understood why they are looking for that. And then we looked at the economics of the bushmeat trade locally. We realized that bushmeat generates about 100,000 euro per year. How is this money used? Most of this money is used either to pay back debts and things like that. So it's not actually invested locally. And we now did a comparative study with subsistence hunting. We realized that the income generated by Baka pygmies and the Bantus natives from subsistence hunting is less than 5,000. But in terms of investment, there were more better investments from subsistence hunting than from poaching.
And at the international level, the newly formed UNEP UNESCO Great Apes Survival Project, GRASP, also realises that poverty is the most important problem underlying the bushmeat trade.
We're dealing with countries that are developing, and some of them are developing faster than others, but they have many things on their plate, many human problems, so why should they worry about a bunch of apes? Well, the fact is that if you bring people out of poverty, but in doing so they destroy their environment, then their short stay out of poverty isn't going to last long. Whereas if you look at great apes and the habitats that they live in as an asset that, if managed properly, could lift people out of poverty forever, then surely that's the way to go. So UNEP at the World Summit on Sustainable Development was joined by UNESCO in launching GRASP as a new kind of partnership, which is looking for sustainable development focusing on great apes and their habitats. Perhaps the best example where that is working is in southwest Uganda and Rwanda, where great ape tourism, visiting both mountain gorillas and chimpanzees, has transformed the lives of many people by giving them a stable employment, bringing lots of money into the country. And in Uganda, 20% of the revenues from people paying to go and see gorillas, and the price has just gone up to $350 to go and spend 1 hour with a group of gorillas, but the number of tourists wanting to do it are greater than the number of tickets available. So the price will probably go up again. And 20% of that money goes into a community fund, and the community decides, well, we need a new hospital, or we need a clinic, or a school, or community centre, and it's being built. And the signs are up there saying, this money is, you know, comes from the fact that you live next door to gorillas. So having gorillas next door could be a great asset if they're survival is linked to some sort of sustainable development. So I guess in a nutshell, GRASP is asking governments to encourage development that is compatible with great apes and stop development that is destructive to great apes or their habitat.
As if hunting and cutting down trees and eating the apes weren't enough, there are also natural problems facing these animals. Diseases, for instance. Fabienne Leendertz is veterinary surgeon working on the great ape diseases at the Thai Chimp Project in the Ivory Coast.
There are many diseases that can threaten these great apes, and the biggest threat is the Ebola virus that also jumps to humans and also kills people in the Congo region, for example. And this is a dangerous disease because it's spreading from ape to ape. So these are dangerous things, and also measles can threaten great apes, and all the things that cause respiratory problems like pneumonia and influenza-like symptoms and so on. And we just identified anthrax as the major cause of death in the Thai chimpanzees. But this is not a disease that spreads from animal to animal, so it's a different epidemiological situation. So each time we have to think from zero.
Do we think this is happening more often now in great apes?
There's no possible answer to this, but I think clearly the habitat is very limited now, and there's also a lot of poaching on these few apes remaining in this habitat. So if there is a disease going through, as it perhaps did 500 years ago, it has a drastic influence on the population and survival of these apes.
Which brings us to another point. We are very closely related to the great apes, to the chimpanzee in particular. Scientists say that nearly 99% of the chimp's genetic material is identical to our own. And this is a point that Dr. Ilke Herbinger, director of the Wild Chimpanzee Foundation in the Ivory Coast, likes to stress when she visits the villagers living near the Thai Chimp Project.
So we have a theatre that we created in collaboration with an Ivorian professional theatre group. And the theatre play talks about the problems of coexistence between humans and chimpanzees, so from crop raiding to bushmeat hunting and to respecting the chimpanzees for reasons because they're very close to us. And we also train school theater groups, so that professional group in collaboration with our foundation, we have trained already 2 school theater groups, so it's also the school children themselves who play the theater play. And now we actually, we did the first round of theater plays in around Thai in the year 2002, and now we came back for the first time, and we really already see that from the first round, really, people picked up how chimpanzees live. So if we now show the film and ask in schools, for example, what do you know about chimpanzees, and ask them what they eat or how they use tools, children can tell you everything. And then I ask, well, did you see the theater? Well, where did you get all this information? Then they all raise their arms, and of course, that then makes you...
It works.
I think of the theater, what is nice, the theater ends with a song of chimpanzees, which is very catchy. And already after the theater play, all the kids start singing that song. But then when we came back, this time after 2 years, for a sort of welcome present, the children were singing that song, and they really still remembered all the phrases, and that really made me really happy.
I bet. What were some of the phrases in it?
Yeah, so the main phrase is Les chimpanzés sont nos cousins, which means the chimpanzees are our cousins. And then in the song, it explains why they're our cousins. So people educate their infants, but chimpanzees educate their infants. People use tools, but chimpanzees use tools. Humans communicate, but chimpanzees have their own language to communicate. So it basically tells about the similarities between chimpanzees and humans.
The animal kingdom and the chimpanzee are more closely related than either of us with any other primate species. So we are more closely related to the chimp and reversely than chimp to gorilla or we to gorilla. So we are real cousins. And the similarities are obvious, of course. I mean, when the public stands and looks at them, they know they are not looking at donkeys or at marmots or whatever. They know they are looking at something which is very close. That makes it also sometimes quite exhilarating in the sense that people feel embarrassed, so to speak, by looking into the mirror, because we see all these similarities, and these similarities are there especially in the expressive behavior. They're quite extrovert compared to, for instance, orangutans or gorillas. They show strong emotions, chimpanzees, and they make that heard also, you hear it from their screams. They have, for instance, a repertoire of facial expressions that is very well understandable to us. It's very much similar to us. They smile, they laugh, they have a sense of humor. People always thought, well, there was a very fundamental distinction between man and the animals. Man being a being that designs its own behavior on the basis of free will and his mental capabilities, etc. Whereas animals were seen in a way, and that's the viewpoint of Descartes, as machines that are driven by instincts, and the word driven implies that they have no free choice, that they are determined by their environment. Now, obviously, that is a dichotomy which is so false, so utterly false, and we see that particularly in these animals. They share our emotions. We know that they, but not only they, lots of other animals have processes of thinking which are much similar to ours. They have memory, they can imagine things. 30 years ago, when you said that, scientists would say to you, well, come on, let's not be joking. This is, can't be serious. Animals don't have imaginations, etc. But with modern types of research, I suppose a food might be coming.
Yes, well, I think that demonstrates your point very well.
There's Jumbo, the first to be there.
Yes.
And the other males, where are they? We'll see them. There's Ying coming behind. And now, if anybody didn't believe that chimpanzees have expectations, well, there you are.
I was going to say, they're demonstrating your point.
Yeah.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of walking around. Oh,
perhaps the most endangered of all species of great apes, and the one most likely to disappear first, is the orangutan. Presently, there are just a few thousand sprinkled across the two islands, Borneo and Sumatra. Professor Jadna Supriyatna works both for Conservation International and the University of Indonesia, and he's calculated the phenomenal rate at which the orangutan's forests are disappearing.
Well, we calculated that the illegal logging in Indonesia now is 6 soccer fields per minute.
Per minute?
Yes, per minute. I'm using not the hectare because it's very hard for people to understand. But I think in Europe and Asia, people like to see the football or soccer. So we calculate that the 6 soccer field per minute that that illegal logging, you know, in Indonesia for already, I think, maybe 3-4 years already,
yes,
in rows. This is approximately $10 million per day from the illegal logging loss. So if the government can prevent the illegal logging, so that you can see that the $10 million per day time per year, 360, so it's already $3 billion loss per year.
That really puts it into context.
You know, if you look at that, and Indonesia borrowing the money for years, less than $3 billion, so that if they can prevent that illegal logging, in fact, you don't have to borrow the money, you know.
Yeah.
And then if you calculate with the forest fires, calculate the conversion, so Indonesia have a lot of loss from the forest.
Yes, they're natural forest fires, are they?
No, it's not natural forest fire. It's, you know, I don't believe natural forest fire. It's people setting fire. Because in the dry season, you know, the lot of smallholders, even the companies who like to convert the forest for oil palm development. So they, burn the forest easy, and they cheap to convert it to, say, to plantation. So the government always mentioned it's a natural forest fire, but nobody believe it.
So what can we do to help the great apes of Asia and Africa in the coming decades? Dr. Russell Mietermeyer is a primatologist and president of Conservation International. Dr. Mietermeyer makes the point that while threats to great apes may be similar worldwide, each individual population needs its own specific conservation plan, as they often contain different subspecies.
Some very good examples are the Cross River gorilla from the border between Cameroon and Nigeria. This is an animal that's down to a few hundred individuals, and it was largely overlooked until very recently when its name was resurrected by some scientists who were looking at it in more detail. You look at the mountain gorilla, that's a very distinct form. The Bwindi population in Uganda of the mountain gorilla, gorilla, it's probably a distinct form. Each of these require their own very specific conservation efforts. You look at the orangutans. Previously, the Sumatran and the Bornean were considered to be only subspecies of one another. Now, the latest information indicates that they're quite distinct at the species level. And as we're looking more in detail at the Bornean populations, it looks like there may be three or four subspecies of the Bornean orangutan. So the problem becomes much more complex, and you really need to focus attention on each of those different forms if you really want to maintain the diversity of this group of animals that's so interesting.
And in order to get these conservation projects rolling, there has to be the political will. But how do we get governments with so many other problems to move endangered species up the list of priorities? Well, some people have put forward an idea which they suggest will help both animals and people. The concept is called World Heritage Species. The new president of the International Primatological Society, Dr. Richard Wrangham, explains how designating the great apes as a World Heritage Species could help everyone.
Once a species is made into a World Heritage Species, the idea is that the key populations will be identified by an appropriate scientific commission, and then the countries where those apes live will be invited to apply for the habitats to be made into World Heritage Sites. Now, World Heritage Site status does not mean that there is automatically a large amount of money given to them. In fact, I think the average for World Heritage Sites at the moment throughout the world is $3,000 from the United Nations. Nevertheless, despite the small amount of direct money, it is clear that the countries are very proud and pleased to have World Heritage Sites, and that protection quality actually does increase because of interest from the public and sources of funding not directly from United Nations.
So is Russell Mittermaier hopeful that we can turn this around, given the very short timescale?
I wouldn't be in this business if I was not an optimist and if I didn't think that this was all doable. And I just look at what we've been able to achieve in Brazil. I went to Brazil the first time in 1971. There was one primatologist. Now you have hundreds of primatologists and major efforts underway to conserve primates and habitats. There's no reason we can't do that in all of the countries in which primates occur. We came through the 20th century without losing a single species or subspecies of primate. We now have a number that are at the edge, right? But I think that if we find the resources, we have a lot of knowledge now. I think if we can get the resources needed to get the job done, there's no reason why anything should go extinct in this century, great apes or any other primate species.
The question is, do we quite realize what we will lose if the gorillas and chimpanzees, orangutans and bonobos go extinct? Professor Jan van Hoff.
It would be a disaster for humankind, I think, because here are our closest relatives, from which we can learn a lot. Okay, that's one thing. But I mean, simply be able to look at these creatures and say, okay, that is our image in a way. Yeah. Our ancestors 5 million years ago must have looked not quite like these, because they have developed as well, but looked like something of the kind. And these animals, of these pre-humans, went walking upright, which they can, but they can't do it for a long time because their body is slightly differently built. And there is the beginning of that cascade of evolutionary developments that led eventually to us. Now, there they are. We are, how many million are we at the moment? I keep losing.
About 7 billion, I think.
Yes. And there they are. And some of these species, the orangutans, we count in the tens of thousands only. Chimps, perhaps. Perhaps 100,000 or something of that nature. Gorillas, less again. That's a small village in this country. And they are split up in isolated populations, which is, evolutionarily speaking, is a bad thing, because they may be inbreeding, they may be highly vulnerable to many things. So they are in the red zone, absolutely.
Last Chance to Save the Great Apes was produced and presented by Anne Blair Gould. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.
If you'd like to comment on this or any other Radio Netherlands program, please email us at letters@rnw.nl. That's letters@rnw.nl.